Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Kuf Yud Amud Aleph, four lines down. Amar Rava, Anosei Isha, Tzarich Shivdok Be'achea. Person who goes to marry a woman should take a look at her brothers in order to assess whether she's an appropriate spouse for him. Shenemar, Vayikach Aaron et Elisheva bat Aminadav, Achot Nafshon. So the pasuk tells us that Aaron married Elisheva bat Aminadav, the sister of Nachshon. Imashma Shenemar bat Aminadav. When the pasuk already tells you it was Elisheva bat Aminadav, and we know that Nachshon was also a son of Aminadav. So by definition, you would know that Elisheva and Nachshon were brother and sister. So then, any Yodea Shachot Nachshoni? Don't I know already that she is the sister of Nachshon? That would have been a given even without the pasuk telling us that information. So Ma Tamadoma Achot Nachshon. So then why does the Torah specify the fact that she was the sister of Nachshon? Mikan, she'onosei isha, tzarich shivdok be'achea. This comes to tell you, or the conclusion from that is, that a person should check out the brothers of the woman that he's coming to marry, because that is a good assessment of what you will have in your offspring. And that is what we say now, Tana, rov banim domim lacheaim. Majority of your children are very similar to the brothers of the mother. So, looking into the mother's brothers, or meaning the spouse's brothers, that's important because the children that will come from that marriage, or issue forth from that marriage, will be very similar to their uncles. So it's worthwhile to look at what the uncles look like, because that will give you a good sense of what the children will look like from this shidduch. That's what we learn from this Achot Nachshon, or the extraneous language of Achot Nachshon, and it relates back to what we said before, that a person who marries Tovim, marry someone that has good yichus, that comes from good lineage, then that propitious for them having children like Pinchas, versus the story with Moshe, where he had a grandson who was Oved Avodah Zarah. And that takes us back to the story of Yonatan ben Gershom ben Menashe. And there in the Sefer Shoftim, it tells us, right after the Bnei Dan leave the area that they're in to go investigate if they can find an area where they can move to, so they send five people, and these five individuals stop in the house of Micha, and when they're in the house of Micha, it says, Tehemai im Beit Micha, Tehemai ikirud kol ha-Nara Levi, they find this Nara Levi, v'yasuru sham, and they go there, v'yamlulu, mi haviyacha halom, who brought you here? Umata sebaze, what are you doing here? Umalacha po, and what type of business do you have here? And then he says, v'yamlem chazo v'chaza sali Micha, this is what Micha did for me. Vayiskereni ve'elo l'kohen. And he hired me to be a kohen. They go ahead and ask him whether they are going to be matzliach in their mission. Their mission is to go and find a new place for the Bnei Danan to go to. And he says, go ahead, because Hashem will be with you. They go up to the north and find an area which is secluded and separated from the main area of the constituents which come from Sidon, from Sidon up in Lebanon. In the area of Tel Dan, they find this little oasis, and they end up saying, wow, this is perfect for us. They go back home to their family Dan, who are Ben Sorau Ben Eshta'ol, that are right here in the area that we are, and they're having difficulty, again, conquering the lower plains, and so therefore they're really like refugees over here, and they decide to move north and go back to Tel Dan. They end up conquering the city, and as the Pasuk says, Ve'ein Matzil, there's nobody to save the inhabitants of the city. Kirochokahi mitzidon. It was far away from Sinon. There was nobody to come in and protect them. Medavarin lahem imadam. It was a quiet, secluded area. V'ibamek. It's in a valley on the other side of the mountain range, so nobody knows about it. That's why they were there for so long, and it was so quiet. And it's a great, beautiful place, an oasis. And then, v'yikru shema ir dan b'shem dan avihem. When they build this new place in the north, they call it Dan after their father. It was really originally known as Laish, and also that's where we know the cave of Banya's Leshem, the water sources for the Yarden, come from. They took this pesel micha and they make it Vionatan ben Gershom ben Menashe, hu banav ayu kohanim l'shevet Adani ad yom glot haaretz. They remain as Kohanim for the Shevet of Dan until they are exiled from the land. So here you have the story of this Pesel Micha, as well as the Kohen to Pesel Micha. And now the Gemara is going to darshan that Pasuk, when the original five who went out as a mission for the Bnei Dan to find a new location, When they came to Beit Micha, they speak to Yonatan ben Gershom ben Menashe, the Nar HaLevi. And then when they go there, it says, Vayasuru Sham, Vayomru Lo, Mi Habiacha Halom. Who brought you here? And the way that the Rashbam explains it is that all of this language is extraneous. Because why are they asking so many questions? Why are they nitpicking at this little Nar HaLevi? They ask him three questions, all of which are the same. So the Gemara sees in that extraneous language an indication that they were hinting to him this. Don't you come from the lineage of Moshe? Don't you come from Moshe Rabbeinu? About whom it is said, Altikrav Halom, don't get too close. This is by the Sneh. So that's the word Halom that they use in the Mihaviacha Halom. Uma ata use baze. Again, by the story of the Sneh, where it says, he's telling Moshe the simanim that he's going to show to Bnei Israel. And so also over here, the question of Mata Oseh Bazeh, and similarly, after the people tell Moshe that they can't hear from God anymore, they want him to relay the information, Hashem says that they should go back to their tents, and you'll stay here with me. So again, they use the term malachafo. The Gemara sees in that triplicate of the question unnecessary language, and therefore they are doreshed the language to indicate that they knew that he was a descendant of Moshe, and they are bewildered by the fact that this descendant of Moshe, this Nara Levi, was a Kohen Avodah Zarah. So Tase Kohen Avodah Zarah, how could it be that you are now involved with Avodah Zarah? Amar lahen, kach mikublani mibeit avi abba. This is the Mesorah I have from my father's house, meaning Moshe Rabbeinu. If his father's Gershom was the son of Moshe, then Avi Abba, my grandfather, is Moshe Rabbeinu. This is the Mesorah that I have. L'olam yaskir adam atzmo, l'avodah zarah, v'yitzarech libriot. Person should hire himself out to avodah zarah and not rely on stakar, not rely on others to supply his parnasa, so that avodah zarah is an option for escaping from poverty. Behu Savar, he misunderstood Avodah Zarah Mamash. He thought that the term Avodah Zarah is like the euphemistic way that we use it today, which is Avodah Zarah refers to El Acher, other gods. But the truth is that if you take it literally, Velohi, El Avodah Zarah is Avodash Zarah Lo. That Avodah Zarah also has a literal meaning. And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu meant in that Mesorah, that Allah maskir adam atzmo avodah zarah, and that doesn't mean to the euphemistic term, the noun phrase, avodah zarah, but rather to avodah shezarah lo. It means work that is foreign to him, and you can see in the Rashbam, that means that avodah zarah is something where if he is chashuv, he is a person of stature, he's an important individual, and the work that he's going to do is beneath his dignity, is denigrating, but there's no isur involved in it. So that is, you have to roll up your sleeves, or you have to be willing to do something that's beneath your dignity in order to support oneself, instead of relying on the coffers of the public or on other individuals to support you. It's important to work in order to garner parnasa. Gadamrle Rav, the Rav Kahana. Like Rav suggests to Rav Kahana, Natosh Nevilta Bishuka Bishokol Agro. You should, now here the question of the girsa is whether it's natosh. You can see in Tosafot that he had a girsa of nashot. Even though he thinks it means the same thing, he points out that the shin and the tet get exchanged or switched around many times in the Hebrew and Aramaic language. But natosh nevilta, you can see in the Rashbam, is hapshet. You will flay the animals. You will take the skins off the animals. So you should be involved in that. You should engage in that work in the shuk. So this means in a public place where this is work that is done that is dirty. Nevertheless, Rav says to Rav Kahana, you should engage in such an occupation. And don't say that I'm too big for this. I'm above this. This is beneath my dignity. It's a denigration or a lowering of my stature to do this. What Rav suggests to Rav Kahana is what Moshe Rabbeinu had said in that Mesorah, which is that one should engage in avoda shizarah lo, something that's foreign to him. Whether that means that it's something that you're not accustomed to, it's something that you're not necessarily well-versed in, you should engage in it because it will provide you parnasa, But even more so, even if it is something that is beneath your dignity or something that you feel is inappropriate for you, nevertheless, you should engage in it in order to provide yourself parnasa and not be itzterech libriot and not need the help of the public or help of other individuals. One other note, the Rashbam and the Balei Tosafot over here argue about Rav Kahana. It says here, commonly Rav Kahana, and then it says, velote magavra rabbana. Don't say that I'm above this. This is beneath me. Don't say that. So what does it mean that he was a Gavra Ravana? Why did Rav say that to Rav Kahana? The Balei Tosafot have a girsa in the Gemara that doesn't say Velotema Gavra Rabbana, but rather Velotema Kahana Ana. Don't say that I am a Kahana. So the way that the Rashbam reads it is because Rav Kahana Kohen Haya. He was a Kohen. Then it would have been beneath his dignity to do something like this or involved in something like this. And then the Balei Tosafot say, don't say that Rav Kahana was a Kohen, because he wasn't a Kohen. And we know that. He brings examples from that, and he says an involvement in the Kuhuna was because he was married to a Bat Kohen, but not because he himself was a Kohen. And therefore, he gives examples in other places, when they use a term, like, don't be involved with the city, Dereisha Asi, that the head of the city is Asi. And over there, again, the Rashbam explains that Asi is a Rofe, from the word Asia, which in Aramaic means a Rofe. Don't be in a city in which a doctor is the head of the city or is running the city. On the other hand, the way that the Balei Tosafot want to read it is, Kolomar shata batzmecha tirosh shishimcha Rav Asi, shlotit batel machmat tzachei tzibur. Don't be in a city where Rav Asi, it's specifying Rav Asi in particular, and saying that don't be in a city where Rav Asi is the head of the city, for two reasons. First of all, he's going to be involved in his learning and not in the tzachei tzibur. And the other way around, if he is involved in the Tzachei Tzibur, he's going to be mevatel from his Torah. So there he says the similar idea that the word Asi over there, you can look at the word Asi to be referencing as a proper noun to Rav Asi, or you can be looking at Asi as referencing to Asia, his profession. So over here again, the interpretation of the word Kahana could be two different ways. It could be Kahana Ana because I am a Kohen, or Kahana, I mean, because I'm Rav Kahana, and I'm a person of stature, I'm a Talmud Chacham. So the Balei Tosafot, similar to what they say in the Gemara in Pesachim, says just like Asi over there meant Rav Asi, over here Kahana means Rav Kahana. And the Rashbam, in both cases, doesn't look at it as being the name of the individual, but rather the occupation of the individual. So over here it says, Lo Tema Kahana Ana, don't say that I am a Kohen, whereas the Balei Tosafot say, don't say that you are Rav Kahana, don't say that you are a person of stature. So that's just a machloka between the Rashbam and the Balei Tosafot, as to what Rav was saying to Rav Kahana when he said to him, don't put yourself up on a pedestal. Was that because he was a Kohen, or is that because he was Rav Kahana? The Rashbam over here questions from the Gemara in Shabbat, the Darshan's regards to a Talmud Chacham. If a Talmud Chacham that has dirt or anything that is improper on his bigadim, he's deserving of death. So over there it sounds like he should not be engaged in things that diminish his stature or anything that would be beneath his dignity. Because even if his clothing is dirty, over there we say that that's inappropriate. But now here the Rashbam gives the exception of asot melacha lit parnes en kan genai. When one engages in work to provide themselves and to have parnosa, that is never something that diminishes the dignity of the individual. And it's understandable. Everybody understands that they need to make a parnosa. And everybody understands that it's important for this individual to engage in parnasa so that he doesn't have to rely on the tzibur for his parnasa. So over there, it's obvious or clear what he's doing and what he's engaged in, and therefore we don't see that as being an undermining of his stature as a Talmud Chacham. On the other hand, if he goes around and his clothes are dirty and disheveled and he's not a Kiddush Hashem, that is problematic. So you have to look at the context. In the context of work, that it's appropriate. In the context of just walking around and not being presentable, that is problematic for a Talmud Chacham. Obviously, these lines are taken by both the Rishonim and Achronim to discuss about what is or isn't appropriate for a Talmud Chacham to engage in, and whether when people of a certain stature, should they not get involved with that? Should they have others that help them out, others that support them? Should the Tzibor support them? When is that appropriate? Or have times changed? All of those are issues that are dealt with, both here and in the context in other places, as to whether one is allowed to take compensation for the teaching of Torah or for engaging in Melechet Shamayim. So this is another factor that needs to be included in that discussion about whether a person should be able to take monies from the Tzibur or accept staka in order to pursue a life of dedication to Shamayim or dedication to Ruchaniyut. So now the Gemara continues and says, Kevin Shira David Shemamon Chaviv Alav Biyoter. After David HaMelech saw that this individual, Yonatan ben Gershom ben Menashe, loved money, so he figured that he'd be the perfect person to make into his treasurer. Since he loved money so much, he would make an excellent treasurer, and that's what we say based on the Pasuk in Divrei HaYamim, that David appoints this individual to be his secretary of the treasury. As the Pasuk says, O Shvuel ben Gershom ben Moshe Nagid al Ha'otzarot. So he was appointed to be the secretary of the treasury, the treasurer, Shenemar Shvuel ben Gershom ben. Here, there's a question about the Girsa. In Divrei Yamim, it's ben Moshe. On the other hand, many of the Gemaras had a Girsa of ben Menashe, and that we'll discuss in the Tosafot a second as to whether you should or shouldn't include the Lashon of Menashe. V'chi Shvuel Shemo? Is Shvuel his name? Halo Yonatan Shemo? Then we already meet him as Yonatan. So I'm Rabbi Yochanan, Sheshav Lekel B'cholibo. That is that Shvuel and Yonatan are synonymous. So why is his name changed to Shvuel? Because Shav Elakel, he returned to God. He was a Baal Tshuva. So even though he had been engaged in Avodah Zarah, and he was a Kohen, the Avodah Zarah, nevertheless, in the end, he did Tshuva, and that's why his name was changed to, or he was nicknamed Shvuel, even though his name was Yonatan. Now, the way the Rashbam phrases it is that we don't find that Gershom had any other children. Since we don't find Gershom with any other children, we must assume that it is the same person. And that's why Chazal view it as Yonatan and Shvuel are synonymous, despite the fact that over here it says Shvuel ben Gershom ben Moshe, and in Shoftim it says that his name is Yonatan ben Gershom ben Menashe. So, despite those differences, because of, first of all, the Nun Atluya by Menashe, and the fact that we don't find any other children to Gershom, Chazal or Doresh, that they are synonymous or the same person, and thereby saying that he did do tshuva at the end of his life. That's interesting because if you remember before in yesterday's daf, at the end of the daf, the Gemara compared Yonatan ben Gershom ben Menashe to Menashe. That's why he was called ben Menashe, not because he was from Menashe, not because his grandfather was Menashe, his grandfather was Moshe. Called him Menashe because he did Masei Menashe. He acted like Menashe in worshipping Avodah Zarah, or bringing Avodah Zarah to the people. But there's another common denominator between them, which is Gemara and Sanhedrin discusses the fact that Menashe, at the end of his life, did tshuva. And so then that would also be another way in which Menashe is a paradigm for Yehonatan ben Gershom ben Menashe, is the fact that he also worshipped Avodah Zarah, brought Avodah Zarah to the people, then in the end did tshuva. So that's another thing that joins them together. The Rashbam over here notes that it seems strange that the Gemara comes up with this drasha that he was shav b'cholibo, because in that parak in Shoftim, at the end of the parak we read before, that it says vayakim lehem bnei dan et hapasel Yonatan ben Gershom ben Menashe hu banav hayu kohanim l'shevet adani ad yom glot haaretz, that they remained steadfast as kohanim to Avodah Zarah, in service as kohanim to Avodah Zarah for the Shevet Bnei Dan up until Dan, all the way until the time that they were thrown off the land. So that means that even after the time of David, he or his family were still kohanim. So how could you suggest that he was in David's cabinet, or that he was in David's government, and that he was Shav B'tshuva? It seems like from here that he was not Shav B'tshuva. You could argue that was him and that was his children. His children remained kohanim, but he himself did tshuva. But the Rashbam over here brings more extensively from the Yerushalmi that suggests that he actually did tshuva, and then after he did tshuva, he was chozer to be a Kohen Avodah Zarah. And that is because after David HaMelech had appointed him to be the Sar HaOtzar, to be the minister of the treasury, Shlomo HaMelech, when he replaced all the ministers, fired him, and therefore he was no longer working. So once he got fired from that job, he had to go back to making Apar Noso. So then he went back to being a Kohen, the Avodah Zarah. In bringing that story, the Rashbam also suggests that even the fact that he was a Kohen, the Avodah Zarah, he was not dedicated to the Avodah Zarah. And the Yerushalmi takes the story that is just hinted to over here by the Bavli and explains what it means that he went to be a Kohen, the Avodah Zarah, to make a Parnoso, but he didn't believe in the Avodah Zarah. And therefore, when people brought him things to be makriv, the Avodah Zarah, he used to tell him, we don't need that. What's he going to do with an animal? This Avodah Zarah has not eaten or drunk anything for many years. So So you don't need this fat cow. We don't need this animal. Take it home with you. Just leave me some flour and eggs. And then he used to eat it instead of giving it to the Avodah Zarah. So even in his quote-unquote worshipping or being a Kohen Avodah Zarah, the Yerushalmi claims that he didn't really believe in it, and he actually stopped others from participating in the Avodah Zarah. And he used to, in a sense, lie to them. So they're telling them, yeah, I'll give it to the Avodah Zarah. And then he would take it for himself. So the Yerushalmi paints a picture of him being this innocent, quote-unquote, individual who's just doing for Parnassah. He didn't believe in the Avodah Zarah, and he protected others from the Avodah Zarah. And when he got another job, he left the Avodah Zarah completely because he was never dedicated to it. He was only there for the money. So that's the way that the Rashbam explains it. There are a number of interesting things about this, the first of which is the age of this individual, because he lived for an extremely long time, because he's found in Sefer Shoftim, and he's a grandson of Moshe, which already would have made him significantly older. Even though we do find Pinchas at the end of Sefer Shoftim, over there, in all likelihood, the Rishonim discuss it, whether it's really in order or not in order. But I guess, you guess at that point, you do have someone who has a similar lineage. We have Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen, just like he is Yonatan ben Gershom ben Moshe ben Menashe. And so they would have been at the same age. But now we have him, according to Chazal, make an appearance in the time of David HaMelech. And then according to the Yerushalmi, he was still around at the time of Shlomo HaMelech. That's a very, very long time for him to live, but maybe not dissimilar to the stories of Pinchas, who also makes cameo appearances in Navi, even at times that seem far away from the possibility of when he was still alive. And the Rashbam explains that was why he had the lengthening of days, is because with regards to the Avodah Zarah, he didn't really treat it as Avodah Zarah, and he actually convinced others not to really worship the Avodah Zarah. That his Einot Zarah be Avodah Zarah gave him the zchut of Arichut Yamim. But that's also what made him the appropriate individual to put as the head of the treasury, because he was very careful about his money. He was very worried about his money and every penny, and therefore if you're going to put him in the head of your treasury, he'll make sure that no money gets spent unnecessarily. It's interesting that the Gemara yesterday contrasted Pinchas versus Yonatan, and again, they have this similar feature that they appear in Shoftim, or late in Shoftim, even though that would have made them extremely advanced in age. The other thing to note over here, as I mentioned before, is whether the Girsa that they bring over here is Shvuel ben Gershom ben Moshe, which is what we have in Divrei Yamim, or should be Ben Menashe. And so the Balei Tosafot say the difference is what you think happened to him in the end. It says, Harcha Garsin and Moshe, Shein Likruto or Shein Menashe. Shouldn't call him Menashe. Sharei Kvar Shav B'cholibo. At that point, he was already a Chozer B'tshuva. So Chozer B'tshuva, you shouldn't call him Ben Menashe, because the whole idea of Ben Menashe was that associating with Menashe. Now that he was a Shav B'tshuva, you should attribute his lineage to Moshe Rabbeinu. V'yesh Degaras Ben Menashe. There are those people that do have the Girsa of Ben Menashe. The time of the feast, Chazar L'Kikulo, Kaperish HaKuntris. That's because he went back to his bad ways after he was fired, or after he was let go from being the Sar HaOtzar. He went back to doing this, and that's what the Rashbam brings from the Yerushalmi about the fact that he was Chozer B'She'elah. And that's why the difference maybe in the Girsa has to do with that fact of whether you should call him Ben Moshe, because at that time he was a Chozer B'Tshuva, or we still call him Ben Menashe, because later on he leaves his act of Tshuva and goes back to worshipping Avodah Zarah. Now we continue in the Gemara, back to the next part of the Mishnah, which the Mishnah says, Vabanim et av, that the children inherit the father. Minolon, how do we know children inherit the father, or more importantly, that sons inherit the father? The truth is that that's not a question, because it's obvious, and we've already proven it from the Gemara before, the fact that a child or a son inherits his father. So the nature of the question of the Gemara, as the Rashbam points out over here, is how do we know that the banim, that the male children take precedence over the female children, which means that when there are sons and daughters, the sons inherit and the daughters do not inherit, even though there is a takanat chachamim that we saw in the Gemara and Ketubot, that the daughters are entitled to iser nechasim, a tenth of the assets of the estate to pay for their dowry. But that is a takanat chachamim. But as far as the Torah is concerned, if there are male offspring, they are the sole inheritors. And that's the question of the Gemara here. How do you know that if there are banim and banot, that only the banim inherit? Dichtiv, because it says, ish ki yamut. The pasuk actually explicitly almost tells you that, which is that when a person passes away, bein ein lo, and he does not have a son, v'arvartem nachlato lebito, then you give his inheritance to his daughter. So you see that the daughter only has relevance when bein ein lo, when he has no son over there. That's what the Gemara says, taima dein lo ben. Since he doesn't have a son, hayesh lo ben, but if he did have a son, ben kodem, then the son would take precedence and he'd be the only inheritor in that situation. So Amalei Rav Papa, the Abaye, so Rav Papa says to his Rebbe Abaye, Ema, why don't we explain the pasuk in the following manner? Ika ben, if there is a son, tirot ben, then the son will inherit. Ika bat, if there is a daughter, tirot bat. Ika ben ubat, if there's a son and a daughter, lo hayli rot, velo hayli rot. Neither of them will inherit. Now, of course, the last line here in the statement of Rav Papa makes no sense. Why would you say, when you have a son and a daughter, neither of them should inherit? Velaman, lirot. Who would be the inheritor in that case? Atu barkasha demata lirot? So in that case, the Bais system went, who do you want to inherit? If the son and daughter are not the first in line to inherit, then who do you think is going to inherit? Barkasha demato? And here the Rishbam says, Moshel Ha'ir, the ruler of the city. You have in the Hagota Bach, he brings from the Rishbam Ipsachim that he's the Shoter Ha'ir, that he is the policeman, the sheriff of the city, and the Oruch brings down that he's the Mochesa Ha'ir, that he's the tax collector for the city. Who do you think is the closest relative to this person? Who is closer of kin than children of an individual? Again, we've already proven that, so that's what Abaye's question to him is, wait a minute, how could you possibly suggest that in the case where there's a son only, or only sons, they inherit? Whether only daughters, they inherit. Son and a daughter, neither of them inherit. So then again, who would you give the Yerusha to? You think the closest person or the best person to give it to is the head of the city, the person running the city? I mean, what he's saying is, who is closer of kin than them, and who do you think you're going to give it to? He's just expressing it in a way and saying, what, you're going to give away the money to the leader of the city, the mayor of the city? So he says, Hachi kamina. If a papa says, this is what I meant. Ika ben ubat. It means that if there are children, meaning sons and daughters that are there, then the sons will not inherit alone, the daughter will not inherit alone, but rather they will inherit together. So what Rav Papa is suggesting now is the way to read the pasuk is not that son comes first and then daughter, but rather to read that when there are sons and no daughters, the sons inherit. When there are daughters and no sons, the daughters inherit. When they're daughters and sons, which is not necessarily addressed by the pasuk, in that case, they will both inherit jointly, meaning that they will have equal share in the Yerusha. As the Rishbam explains, the way the Rav Papa is going to read the pasuk is the following. When there is a son without a daughter, the son will inherit. That will become something that the Gemara will ask. Isn't that obvious that the son should inherit? The next part of the pasuk will tell you that when there is a daughter without sons, the daughter inherits. That might be a chiddush already, that daughters inherit, because that is not as straightforward as you think. And then when they're both together, we will say that they both inherit. And obviously that is a big chiddush. But then you'll read the pasuk in the following manner. He doesn't have a son, but if Hayalo ben, had he had a son, then he would have gotten the nachala. But that's a son without daughters. But he only has daughters, the daughters will get it. And then you read the pasuk, then we don't have the case of ben and bat. So ben and bat, then they would be yoreish together, and that's what he says that the meaning of the pasuk is, and then you wouldn't know that the son takes precedence over the daughter, or in essence, we wouldn't read the pasuk as giving the son precedence over the daughter. Tabalei Tosafot over here discuss as to whether this drush or this whole conversation between Abaye and Rav Papa is only according to one who says shelo kisidran, according to one who says that the psukim are out of order. And since they're out of order, we learn it from the word sheiro, and the word havara is then extraneous to be learned for the brayta of Rabbi. Because according to one who says that havara is the limud for the av, then it's necessary to write it in this manner because of that. And then you couldn't make these drusha, you couldn't explain it the way that Rav Papa wanted to explain it, because Rav Papa's whole premise is there is an easier way to write the pasuk. You could have just written the pasuk, v'zera ein lo. If you wanted to tell us, when there are no children, you move on to the next layer, which are the brothers, then you should have used the word zera. Why are you getting involved in ben and bat? So the fact that it gets involved in ben and bat must be that there's some chiddush over here. Once you do that, you have to explain the chiddush. But that only works if you don't need the word vavartem to teach you about the av inheriting in this case. But if you need that for the av, then you can't ask, why did you write it in this manner? You couldn't write it in another manner because you need the word havara to teach you about the father inheriting. In the end, the Bali Tosafot back away from that, and the Ri says that he thinks he can explain it by his position here, even according to the one who says that it's kisidran. But just so you know, that would also maybe influence how or which way we would paskin with regards to the sourcing of the dinim that we saw before. Now the Gemara continues, and Abaye asks him, okay, now that we amended the explanation of Rav Papa, Amale Abaye, Beitzer Kralish, Minan Hechadaletle Alechad Bra, Lirtinu Lekula Nichse? We need a Pasuk to come and teach us when there's only one son, that son should be the inheritor of the property? That's the question of Abaye, which is, according to your explanation now, part of the significance of the Pasuk is to teach you that when there's a son alone, that he gets the Yerusha. The Abaye says, I need a Pasuk to teach me that? That seems obvious and extraneous because, of course, the son is closest of kin. And you can see here in the Girsa of the Rashbam that it says, Amalei Rav Papa le Abaye. So it's as if there is a pause there, and now Rav Papa is responding to Abaye. V'delma ha'kamashmalon. So Rav Papa says back to him, maybe that's exactly what the Pasuk is teaching us. The Bat Nami Bat Yerushahi. The focus is not on the son, but rather on the daughter. Yeah, sure, when the son is there, the son inherits. That's not the Ikar part of the Pasuk. The Ikar part of the Pasuk is to teach you that when there's a daughter there alone, that she inherits. So the Havamina would have been that when there is a son alone, he inherits. When there are sons and daughters together, they will inherit. But when there's a daughter without a son, then she would not inherit. And that's the Chiddush of the Pasuk to come and tell us that even when the daughter is alone, she's able to inherit, and that's what Va'avartem Nachalato, the Bito, comes to teach you. So again, according to the amended way that we view Rav Papa now, when there's a son alone, it's clear that he inherits. When there's a son and a daughter, they both inherit. Then when there is just a daughter, that's the Chiddush of the Pasuk. That's what the Rashbam says, Kol Rabotai Mefarshim Kein. All my Rebbeim explain the Gemara in that manner. But he says, V'lo Nehira. He says, I don't understand it, and I don't agree with that being the way to present the question over here. And he says, V'ein zu shita da Gemara. This is not the way that the Gemara normally works. The basis for his question is not necessarily from a logical standpoint, but from a methodological standpoint. He says that if you read enough Gemaras, you get a feel for the back and forth of the flow of a Gemara. And therefore, it's not correct here because it's not the shita of the Gemara, shiachisha makshah svarata mitaretz. Below ta'ana acheret. It doesn't make sense that the responder will undermine the question of the questioner without introducing something new or a new logical argument to support his position. Ve'alim kein makshilo mitzad acher. Unless he asks him from a different place and he shows him that it must be this way. Over here, all Rav Papa says in the end is, according to the way that his Rebbeim are learning, is Abaye says, what's the Chiddush here? Meaning that, what do you need to know that a daughter inherits? What do you need to know that a son inherits? That they inherit together? Yeah, that is a Chiddush. But why would you need to know the information that independently they would inherit? And along comes Rav Papa and says, yes. That's right, you need that independent information, which is to teach you that the daughter does inherit. And the Rashbam says that the nature of the Gemara is not that way, where Abaye will say, well, why do you need to tell me about it? Then Rav Papa says, I do need to tell you about it. No, Rav Papa would have to introduce new information. And therefore, the Rashbam offers an alternate pshat, which is, and that is, the Sagadat Chamina, you would have thought, Rav Papa says, the Lo Tirash Bat Kalau. A daughter will not inherit whatsoever. Lo Ima Ben, Velo Beloa Ben. Not with the son, and not without the son. The bischarim kabid rachmana, because the Torah focuses on the male lineage, that the psukim and the parshia talk about echav and echei aviv, and mishpacha, which is mishpachat av, and therefore daughters would be precluded wholly from inheritance. That's even if there were no sons that were there. And the kamash malon is no, that the daughter is a party to the inheritance. And that's what the puzzle comes to teach you. Not only she be a party to the inheritance when she is alone, but she's a party in general to inheritance. So not only will she inherit when there are no sons, but even when there are sons and daughters, she'll be on an equal plane with the sons because now she's in the world of inheritance. So as opposed to his Rebbeim, we saw the question being, why is it necessary to tell me that a bat is yoreshet alone? But of course, together with the son, it would have been fine. And Rav Papa comes along to tell you, no, not only that, but also a daughter alone is a Chiddush. The way that the Rashbam reads it is that a daughter would be completely precluded from the world of Yerusha had it not been for the Pasuk. And that's what Rav Papa is telling Abaye, that's the Chiddush over here. The Chiddush is that had it not been for this Pasuk, you would have said the daughter doesn't inherit not with the sons, not without the sons, not at all. When the Pasuk already comes and gives you a Chiddush that the daughter is in the world of Yerusha, then Rav Papa says once you put her into the world of Yerusha, there are two aspects of that that are manifest. One is that she will inherit when there are no sons. But number two is she will also inherit when there are sons. And so that's the Chiddush that Rav Papa is now responding to Abaye with, which is Abaye suggested this was all unnecessary. And he says, no, 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 wait a minute. This is necessary because without this, we would have precluded a daughter completely from the world of Yerusha. Now that you've re-entered her into the world of Yerusha, that has implications which are both that she'll inherit when she's alone and without other sons, but also in a case where the sons are present, she will inherit on an equal footing with them. And the reason the pasuk couldn't combine and say benu bat or beno bito is because you need the limud of rabbi from the word havara. And the word havara only is applicable if you separate the ben from the bat to teach you the din of rabbi that the bat will move Yerusha from shevet to shevet. On the other hand, the Rebbeim, the Rashbam, will read it in that manner as well, which is that the reason that they think that when they are together with the ben, that the bat will be Yoreshet, but you would have had a Havamina that she would not be Yoreshet alone, is because of that Havara issue. When there is a son and a daughter, at least a portion of the Nachla remains with the Shevet. Only a portion of it will become Havara, and that's why they will inherit together. But there's a bat alone, then the entire Yerusha will be passed over to another Shevet, and that would not be acceptable. That's the way that Rav Papa is answering the Chiddush is over here, is that even when she's alone, that is a Chiddush, according to the Rabotav Shel Rashbam, that she should inherit, because she will cause that Havara. They says, how, that we can learn out of the Pasuk that's brought then later on by the Benot Slav Chad, which says, V'chol bat yureshet nachala mimatot b'nei Yisrael, echad mibishpachat meitaviyah tiyel isha, l'man yishu b'nei Yisrael ish nachalat avotav. So over there you have a Pasuk that explicitly tells you that a daughter inherits her father. So I don't need that from this pasuk. So that's what Abaye says to him. So therefore, according to the other Rabotav Shel Rashbam, the Abaye says you don't need to tell me that a daughter alone inherits because of the pasuk by Benot Slav Chad. And for the Rashbam, you don't need to tell me that a daughter is relevant to the world of Yerusha, because we already know that from the Benot Slav Chad. So Abaye rejects Rav Papa's questioning or explanation over here, and therefore he says the necessity for the pasuk is to teach you that a ben goes before the bat, because otherwise what would you have the pasuk for? Rav Papa's suggestion that the whole point of the pasuk is to tell you that ben is yoresh and a bat is yoreshet, that already we know from other psukim, and that would not be worthwhile for the pasuk to be teaching us just about the fact that a ben is inheriting and a bat is inheriting, and if they're together, they would be equal. Because if that was the case, you could have said it in a much simpler form, which is to say that if Rav Papa was right, then the pasuk could just have written this way, V'achi b'ayla d'michtav, ish ki amut v'zera ein lo, unatatem et nachalato. Then if a person passes away and he has no offspring, then you give his nachalat to his brothers. Zera would have included both men and women, girls and boys, and then you wouldn't have any question. The fact that it separates girls and boys must be for some significance. The significance is not what Rav Papa suggested, that a bat is yoreshet, but rather for the explanation that Abaye gave, which is the fact that a ben goes before the bat. And that's the source for the fact that a ben is inheriting before the bat. Rav Acha bar Yaakov says it comes from here. This is where the limud of ben going before a bat comes. So Rav Acha bar Yaakov says you can learn out the fact that a daughter inherits, because it says in the Parshia that leads up to the Parshia of Yerusha, the whole thing is triggered by the Benot Slav Chad, who asked the following question. Lami yigara shem avinu mitoch mishpachto? Why should our father's name be wiped out from his family? Ke'en lo ben, because he has no child, he has no male child. Tzna lanu achuza b'toch achei avinu. Let us inherit now amongst the brothers of our father, and let us be the inheritors of our father's estate. Taima de'en lo ben. That's only because he doesn't have a son. Hayesh lo ben, ben kodem. Had he had a son, the son would have taken precedence. So that's where Rav Acha bar Yaakov learns it out from. He says, look, from those psukim, it's clear that Benot Slav Chad premised their whole case on the fact that he has no son. If he had a son, they wouldn't have brought their case. So that shows you that they believe that the son goes before the daughter. So there you have a proof to the fact that son takes precedence over the daughters. Where it says, V'dilma Benot Slav Chad hu dekamran hochi. That's not a statement of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. That's what Benot Slav Chad assumed was the case. Nitna Torah v'nitchad shoch halocha. Maybe after the Torah was given, the halacha was changed, or the halacha is different. Meaning that the Benot Slav Chad present their case with an underlying assumption that they will not inherit if there was a son. Had there been a son, we wouldn't have inherited. Now that there's no son, we want to inherit. So that is their statement. But their statement is premised on either what they thought the halacha should be, or what the practice of the time was. Then the Torah comes afterwards and stipulates what are the halachot of Yerusha. In that stipulation of the Yerusha, maybe the din changed. And in that case, their assumptions were proven wrong. The way that we're reading is their assumptions are proven right in the end, but you can't prove anything from that, what they said, because the Torah might have said otherwise. And that's what Rav Papa was even suggesting, that the Torah wasn't coming to say the ben goes before the bat, but rather that the ben and the bat were equal. So if you did read it like Rav Papa, that's exactly how you would have to explain it. That Benot Tzofchad present the case based on what they think should be the case. The Torah says you're wrong. It is that the ben and the bat should be equal. Obviously, Rav Papa was just asking as a question. He didn't believe that that was the case, but he asked it as a question. But that's how you would read Rit Torah. If that's true, then Rav Acha Bar Yaakov's proof is not a good proof, because the statement of the Benot Tzofchad is not Torah, it is their claim. Ela mechavarta kedishanina miikara. Must be like what we said before, that it comes from the pasuk of Ish ki yamutu benin lo, arvarta minachalato libito. So now we have another attempt. Ravina Amar Mihocha says, Hakarov elav. Hakarov karov kodem. So again, we learned before from the pasuk, Benatata minachalato l'shiro, Hakarov elav in mishpachto. Says, Hakarov elav, Hakarov karov kodem. The closest of kin inherits first. So what you're suggesting now is that the son is a closer kin to the father than the daughter. We know why the son is considered to be closest of kin, because he steps into the shoes of his father. Umay kurva de ben mibat, she ben kam tachet aviv liyada. Where was that precedent that we saw that the son steps into the shoes of the father? That was by Yehud, by the case of the Amar Ivriya, where the son can marry the Amar Ivriya, just like the father can marry the Amar Ivriya. Ulesteachuza. And by the case of steachuza, where the son is given the right to redeem it, if he redeems it, it's as if the father redeemed it, and it goes back to the possession of his father in the Yovel, and does not stay with the Gizbar, and then get distributed to the Kohanim. So that's true by the son. Those are the unique aspects of the son. Where it says, Yada, bat lav bat yadahi. Now, the reason a daughter is not included in Yada is because she's just not relevant to the case. It's not that necessarily that the son is better than the daughter, because he steps into his father's shoes for Yehud. The problem is that a bat can't step into her shoes of her father for Yehud, because she is a woman. And by definition, she's not going to be marrying the Amar Ivriya. So her preclusion from that halacha is technical in nature. It's not because she's any less than her brother. And when it comes to a steachuza, nami, mehai pircha gufa hu de kakaimet le, the Tano. And from this pircha itself, that is how the Tana gets it. For the Baalei Tosafot, that's the end of this statement, the end of the girsa. For the Girsa of the Rashbam, it continues and says, Klum yeshibum, el makom she'ein ben. The only reason that there is yibum is because there is no son. And therefore, if there is a son, he takes precedence. And so too by a daughter. So then, that would disprove this proof. El mechavarta kedishanina miikar. It's clear that is like we said above. So the proof that Ravina wants to bring is the fact that the closest of kin is the inheritor. And the son is a closer of kin than the daughter. So given that, the son will take precedence over the daughter. The Gemara says, how do you know the son takes precedence over the daughter? How do you know he's closer of kin than the daughter? Between the son and the brothers, we already proved that the son is of closer of kin. Because even though the son fills into the shoes by Yehud, the brothers fill into the shoes by Yibum. But the trump card was the fact that when there is a child, when there is a descendant, when there is a ben, there is no Yibum. So that showed us that the ben was in front of the Av. And when it comes to a daughter, what's the story there? By Yehud, she's not relevant. So you can't contrast the status of a son and a daughter with regards to Yehud, because the daughter's not relevant in that parsha. Ah, steachuza. What about the fact that by a steachuza, the son is not considered to be an acher, an outsider purchasing the property? So maybe over there should be a difference in the din. The Gemara answer is that the whole source for that din is from the same logic that we used to give the ben precedence over the brothers. Which is where the Gemara over there says, how do you know that the acher that we're mentioning over there are the brothers, and the one who's not an acher is the son? Why don't you say it the other way around? The brothers are the ones who are close of kin, and the son is the acher. So the Gemara answers over there, okay, after trying to determine who's closer of kin, the brothers or the son, that the son is closer of kin because of the issue of Yibum. That when the son's around, there is no Yibum. That logic is equally applicable to the daughter. We already saw that before, that the daughters and the sons are equal in that way, because a daughter is poter, the deceased's wife, from performing Yibum, or from the deceased brothers having to perform Yibum. And so you see a daughter is on equal footing with the son with regards to that. If that's the case, then in the Gemara in Erechin, when it says that a son is considered to be not an acher, then a daughter also would be considered not to be an acher. Even though the Gemara in Erechin says that a ben is the only one who's not considered to be an acher, a bat is not considered to be an acher. So the Rashbam explains that is because of a limud that the Gemara has over there with regards to steachuza. V'tana debei Rabbi Shmuel, koshu acher b'makom ben. Ubat nami b'kom ben ki acher damyo. The bat is also considered to be acher in the face of a son. So that, Hane Mile, how do we know that? So the answer is because of the Yerusha. Since we know by Yerusha that the Ben goes before the Bat, in the end, that's the same din by the Steachuza. How do we know that by Steachuza, the Ben will take precedence over the daughter, and he will be the insider, and the daughter will be an outsider? Because of Yerusha. So now you're making it into a circular logic. If you want to prove by Yerusha that a son comes before a daughter because of Steachuza, the only reason the son comes before the daughter by Steachuza is because by Yerusha the Ben comes before the daughter. So that can't be your proof to the fact that the son takes precedence over the daughter. That's the way the Rashbam reads it. The Baalei Tosafot are troubled by that reading of the Gemara, and therefore they say that the Gemara ends after it says, Mihai Pircha Gufa, that the source for the fact that by Steachuza the son is the insider and the daughter is the outsider is Yerusha. And if Yerusha is the source, then you can't bring that as the source for the fact that Yerusha should take precedence, because then you have circular logic. So for that reason, the Gemara rejects Ravina's understanding and goes back to the Mishanina Meikara that the source must be the Pasuk of Ve'inein lo v'avartem nachlato l'bito. V'yibaitem ha-me'ocha. Some want to learn it out from here. It says, V'inechaltem otam livnechem achareichem. It says with regards to the Eved Kenani that you will pass them on as Yerusha to your sons. B'nechem v'lo b'notechem. You'll pass it to your sons and not your daughters. So you see, in the face of sons, daughters have no claim on the Yerusha. They have no claim on this property or this estate. The Eved Kenani is considered to be a property of the individual, and that property is passed to his sons. It says, B'nechem v'lo b'notechem. Elamiato, if that's the case, what are you going to do with the pasuk that we say in Vayayim Shamoa? L'mani yirbu yimechem, b'mei v'nechem. Why should you do these mitzvot? Why should you keep these mitzvot? In order to lengthen the days of yourself and your children. So hachanami b'nechem v'lo b'notechem. So you're going to say the same diuk that b'nechem means your sons and not your daughters. So only long life will be granted to your sons, not to your daughters. My answer is brocha shiny. Brocha is different. When you're talking about a brocha, it's equally relevant to the sons and the daughters. So in that case, we'll look at the word b'nechem in the more generic sense. Remember, in Hebrew, when you have plurality of both male and female, it takes on the male form. So if you want to say sons, use the word b'nechem. If you want to say sons and daughters, you also use the word b'nechem. So when you want to determine in the Torah, is b'nechem mean sons, or is b'nechem mean sons and daughters? So the Gemara before said that the diuk was b'nechem v'lo b'notechem. Gemara says, is that really true? I can find you other places where the word b'nechem means both sons and daughters. Gemara says, no, no, no. Over there, in that case, it is because it's a bracha. And a bracha is relevant to both sons and daughters. There's no reason to believe there that b'nechem is uniquely the son's purview and not the daughter's purview. The Gemara in Kiddushin goes as far as to show from that, uchtavtem amuzuzot beitecho visharecho, that the mitzvah that's mentioned before that is the mitzvah mezuzah, and then it puts, l'man yibu yimechem. And the Gemara there says, only boys need ribu yamim and not daughters. So from there it's clear that the mitzvah mezuzah is shayachet to daughters. Mitzvah mezuzah is also relevant to daughters. And therefore we won't learn out that the mitzvah mezuzah is only for the boys and not the girls, but rather it's for both males and females it's relevant the mitzvah mezuzah, and they learn it out from this l'man yibu yimechem, because everybody needs ribu yomim. And that's what the Gemara is saying over here, bracha shiny, that when it comes to a bracha, of course, it's relevant to everyone, of course. It has a more expansive explanation of the word b'nechem. But in other cases, we'll take b'nechem literally and say b'nechem v'lo b'notechem. So that will be an alternate way to learn it. So we have two possibilities of how to learn that the ben is yoresh and not the bat when there are banim, and then only when there are no banim is the bat yoreshet. And then one source is the fact that the pasuk itself, if you read it literally, means v'chiyamutu b'nein lo v'avartim nachlato l'bito. So that would seem to come out of the pasuk. The other alternative is what we just saw here. V'inhalchaltem otam livnechem achareichem. By the Yerusha of an Eved Kenani, it specifies that the sons get it and not the daughters. And so that would be indicative, again, of the fact that the sons, when they are around, do not allow for any of the daughters to inherit alongside of the sons. And now the Gemara continues, says, V'achim min ha'av nuchlim u'manchilim. Brothers who share a common father, they both bequeath inheritance and inherit from each other. Minolan, how do you know, and the question of the Gemara here is not, again, whether, how do you know that brothers inherit each other, but rather, how do you know by brothers, they're only considered to be brothers when they have a common father, not when they have a common mother. Amar Rabba, Achya Achva, Achva b'mnei Yaakov. Because we have a Gzeres Shava from the word Ach that is found here, to the word Ach that is found by b'nei Yaakov. Over here in our parsha it says, V'natatam enachlato le'achav. If there's no son and there's no daughter, then you'll give the inheritance to his brothers. So that's the word ach that I find here. And in Breshit, it says about the brothers of the Shvatim, Shnei Masar Avadecha Achim Anachnu, B'nai Ish Echad. It says we are 12 brothers, the children of one man. And as the Rashbam points out, B'nai Ish Muyutaru. That's extraneous language, the drosh, the stamachim, inu elam min ha'av. From that extraneous language of B'nai Ish Echad that connects them through the father, shows you that Achva is determined by the father. Since over there by B'nai Yaakov, Achva is determined by the father, so too over here, Achva is determined by the father. I would have said even without the Rashbam's explanation, you would just say, the fact that they called themselves brothers over there, even though they did not have the same mothers, they still called themselves brothers. So you see from that, that brotherhood is determined by the father and not by the mother. And that's what we bring the Gzeir Shav of Ach Ach from there to our Parshia of Yerusha. Mal Alan Min Av Lo Min Aim, just like the Shvatim had a common father but not a common mother. Avkan Min Av Lo Min Aim, so to over here in the Parshia of Yerusha, it's a common father and not a common mother that makes them brothers. V'lomali, why do I need that limud from B'nai Yaakov? In the Parshia of Yerusha, we already learned in yesterday's daf. It ends on at the end that Avakarov elav mi mishpachto v'yarash shotativ. And we learn from that, mishpachat av kruya mishpacha, mishpachat eim ena kruya mishpacha. The father's family is called a mishpacha. The mother's family is not called a mishpacha. And we saw that because of mishpachotam, the veit avotam. So we see that mishpacha is only relevant with the father's family, not the mother's family. So if you already have that limud by Yerusha, what do you need this limud from B'nai Yaakov? Enochanami, the Gemara says, you're right. We don't need a limud or the Gzeira Shavar from B'nai Yaakov. We can learn it out from the Parshia itself. It calls it mishpacha. Mishpacha is only relevant when it's from the father's side. So then the Gemara says, V'chi itmar de Rabbo. So then where does Rabbo's Gzeira Shavar of Ach Ach come in? Linyan Yibum itmar. That is said by Yibum, because by Yibum it says, Ki yishvu achim yachtav. So there you have the word ach, and there you don't have the word mishpacha found there. So how do I know, ki yeshu achim yachdav, that the ach that is found over there is achva achva to B'nai Yaakov? That is the gzeira shava of Rabba to teach you that Yibum is only performed by brothers who share a common father, and not by brothers who only share a common mother. That's achim and av, are nuchlim uman chilim, as well as they are relevant to the parshia of Yibum. Whereas Achim Minaim, brothers that share a common mother, are in neither of those. They're not Yoresh or Marish to each other, and they do not perform Yibum. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the bottom of Kuf Yud Amud Bet.